Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
So on today's Mental Health Monday, we're going to be talking about mental health and the mental health of dads, mental health of parents, mental health of new dads. And we're going to be speaking to a couple of gents in the studio who are going to talk through some of the issues that they've seen, that they have indeed faced, and how they are coming through the other side. In a few moments, we're going to meet John Neville. He's based in Knowsley. He runs a website called thisdadcan.co.uk. We start off, though, with officially through social media, he's known as the PND Daddy, Tony Crone. Tony, thank you for your time. Great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
You're welcome. Nice to meet you.
You are officially the PND Daddy. Explain for people who don't know PND. What does it stand for?
Postnatal depression. It's any form of depression after having a child.
It's something which instantly some people might think, hang on a minute, postnatal depression, isn't that the thing that the mums get? What was your experience of it, if you don't mind explaining?
For me, I had exactly the same views of I didn't think I could get it. So when I had Elizabeth, and that was my first child, when I started getting down, I just put it down to, as I think one of my friends called it, jealous dad syndrome. And I sort of put it down to that. I thought I was being jealous rather than anything. I didn't think I could get PND. It wasn't until about 6 months into Elizabeth being here that one of my health visitors was like, well, actually, 1 in 10 men get it. So you could be one of those 1 in 10 that have it.
So what did it feel like?
For me, it was, there was definitely a lack of love towards Elizabeth. It was, best way to describe it, I was holding someone else's child. So I knew that she was mine. I knew that I had to look after her. But it felt like I could have been babysitting my friend's kids. I didn't feel that connection where, you know, I want to hold you for hours. It was like, I want to hold you, I want to give you back. And it developed from that into, like, just me getting really low mood and getting to the point where, like, I didn't even want... Elizabeth got to the point where she didn't want to be by me. And it got to the point where I just like, yeah, you don't want to be with me, that's fine. And just, I suppose I lost all love for her, if that's the best way of describing it.
I mean, in terms of the feelings that you had at that time, was it the experience that you were having? Was it one which you were thinking, hang on, this doesn't feel right? Or was that you just thinking, well, this is how fatherhood is affecting me. This is just the life that I'm going to lead now that I've got kids.
I think it was a little bit of both. I was... Leading up to having a baby, you sort of have those excitements and you picture in your head what it's going to be like being a dad. So we found out we were having a girl and I was like, it's going to be daddy's little girl. We'll go swimming, we'll go do all this stuff and we'll be inseparable. And you don't think about the practical side of it, like, yeah, baby's going to need its bum changing, it's going to need feeding. You don't, when you're having your first child, I didn't think that. I just thought of all the good stuff. So when it came to having the baby, I was like, well, where's all this good stuff? The baby can't talk, you know, doesn't, it just lies there all day.
Yeah.
And that's how I got my disconnection. It was like, I forgot about all the actual practical stuff and wasn't ready for it.
It's a really sort of hard time, isn't it? And particularly I always think the first 10 days as well, with my first, where you think the first 10 days that feel like you're almost going through no man's land because you don't really know what's going on. And also the child doesn't really react to you other than just to lie there and cry. But then you hope that then you start to see signs and you get that recognition. Was there a moment where you thought, hang on a minute, there's not a connectivity there, that bond isn't forming?
I think it was about 3 or 4 months into her being, like, after her being born, I'd come back. I was living in Norfolk at the time. And I planned a 3-week holiday, come back, see all my family, come back home. And it was during that 3 weeks, it was like Mel was feeding. So she was doing all the nights, which was really nice because I got to sleep. But it was because she was doing that, she'd then do the nappies during the night. So I felt like I wasn't doing anything during the night. And my family took over during the day because they've only got 3 weeks before I go back home. So they were doing as much as they can. And it was during that when I started to explore it. I'd gone out for the day and I said to Mel, I think I've got some form of depression. I didn't say PND at the time, but I was like, I've got some form of depression. I don't feel anything towards her. It's like, you know, as you say, those first 10 days are hectic, but it was like after those 10 days, I expected things to get better and they just didn't.
Did your partner react in a way you would expect to react?
I think Mel was very, it was her first child as well. And even PND in for her was would have been a new thing. So when she researched it, she sort of was like, but you're a man. Are you sure you've got PND? But that said, once we'd had the conversation, she was very supportive and was like, yeah, we'll get you whatever help. We'll get figure it out together.
When you had the health visitor conversation and the health visitor, they sit down and you get them a cup of tea and they go through all these things and it's like, baby this, baby that, mum this, mum that. The moment when they turn to dad and go, oh, are you all right as well? Was that an easy thing to open up to, or was that something you thought, I'll raise it with the health visitor to see what they say?
I had to make the approach to the health visitor. So as you say, it's very mum focused. You know, when Elizabeth was born and Mel was in hospital for 2 days, it was like, dad, go home. You know, we'll look after mum and baby, which was strange because I didn't have my new baby with me. And then, yeah, when the health visitors come, there was a few times you try and talk to the midwife or the health visitor, and I remember the exact words, we're here for mum and baby, you need to go and sort yourself out. And it wasn't until, it was actually when I had my breakdown and made an attempt on my life, one of the health visitors came, and it was a male health visitor in their mental health team. And he was just the best health visitor I ever had. And it was like, he came especially to talk to me. And it was like a sit-down conversation. He went through the framework that they do with women, because unfortunately we don't have one for men at the moment. And it was like, obviously some questions weren't relevant, but when he went to it, it's like, you're showing the signs of, if you were a woman, I'd be like, you definitely have got PND.
We're talking with Tony Crone on Mental Health Monday, the PND daddy on social media, explaining his story. He's got a blog where he's put a lot of his story down as well, which we'll touch on in a few moments' time. You touched on there, Tony, in terms of how bad things got. The moment where suicide became a thought process, where were you at in that stage? You took sort of 3 to 4 months, you realized the connection wasn't there. Was it beyond that?
Yeah, it was I can remember the time because it was the Winter Olympics last time. It was 4 years ago, and I'd gone to my GP, been referred, spent 3 days in hospital with some medication, and came out. It was about 4 or 5 weeks even after that. Just nothing was working. I wasn't sleeping. I was having horrible dreams and really bad anxiety. And I just woke up one morning and sort of said to Mel, I'm just going out the shops, and just basically started walking towards some train tracks. Mel phoned me and figured out what was going on. And it was, I actually got to the point where I was on the train tracks. There was a train stopped about a couple hundred metres up the tracks. They realised I was on the tracks. And it was an off-duty police officer back then that sort of taught me off the tracks.
That conversation you had, do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, with the off-duty police officer. Yeah, it was quite a funny one, actually, because it was, obviously I was in Norfolk, and it was the general stuff trying to get me off the tracks and talk to me, but it was the little things he did. So he made Scouse jokes, and, you know, being Scouse, we're used to them now. But it was like, you know, he made little jokes, and, you know, when I was like, I don't feel like this, he was like, you've got to teach your daughter how to put your car on bricks, and stupid stuff that we don't tend to find funny usually, but at that moment it was like just what I needed. He just talked to me like a normal person, whereas doctors and that talk to you like you're a patient. Well, yeah, you are a patient, so they talk to you like you're just someone they need to cure.
Yeah, maybe I think at any point, any conversation at that point may have been a helpful one. Mm. So we'll forgive him any old-fashioned 1980s stereotypes, however or whatever he chose to go down that particular path. But he may have been thinking, I just need to say anything. What's the only connection that I could make?
A lot of it was he was just trying to make me laugh and try and show me there was reasons to be here. And like, you know, when he spoke to me about my daughter and that, he didn't know my daughter. We've spoke since it happened through email and that, but it was sort of, he didn't know my daughter, but he made me realise that my daughter needs me for a plethora of different reasons.
Did you feel at that time, or was there a moment where you thought, right, I need to almost embrace the fact that there is information out there in regard to postnatal depression aimed at women, so that's affecting me, so I'm going to kind of embrace that, accept that as almost a diagnosis, if you like, and put my faith in people to see me right?
I think, yes, it was. After the attempt on my life, I went back home after taking the hospital again and go through all the mental health things again. And bizarrely, they didn't have any room for me locally. So it was like, we'll send you home, we'll give you CBT, and we'll just monitor you, come backwards and forwards to the hospital. And there was that moment, the first night I went back home, I just got home and Elizabeth was still awake. Mel was obviously distraught because the whole day had gone by this point. And I don't know why it happened or what, but Elizabeth reached out to me and just grabbed hold of me. And she was only 6 months old, so it was like, it was the first time she'd ever come towards me. And I've always described it on my blogs and things as a pilot light kicking in. And it was just that little flicker of love that just started to come back. And it was like, you know what, if I feel that little tiny bit, then that's worth getting better for. And it was, I sort of, you know, embraced that diagnosis at that point. It was, yes, I think I've got PND. It's hard to get it accepted medically, but, and I started basically looking at things that women do to help their PND and just adapting it a little bit to accommodate a dad kind of thing.
Forgive me, I got a chill when you said that. I don't know if that's the right reaction or the right thing to say to you, but actually that moment when you get home, because many people talk about on this program suicide attempts and how they feel just afterwards and the vulnerability that comes with that actually. But at that period of vulnerability for you, you got that little moment, that little sort of the pilot light, as you said, the ignition, the spark that, that then puts you on a new journey. Do you feel lucky that, that sort of reached out hadn't happened then?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think if that wouldn't have, that's the push I needed at the time. It was, you know, I'd say it was only a little flicker, but it was that push that I needed to really push me to start doing more with Elizabeth and becoming a little bit more hands-on, trying to figure out how to, you know, how to get myself better rather than just relying on medication and everyone else to do it for me.
We've got Tony's story on Mental Health Monday. Let's bring John Neville into the conversation as well from thisdadcan.co.uk. John, I mean, sometimes people, maybe quite rightly, for various different reasons, focus on mum, the physical effects of giving birth as well, and the problems that we know about that can exist after birth as well. But here's a great example in Tony and people like Tony that actually you've got to focus on dads as well, because one without the other makes it, you know, a much, much less effective partnership in terms of dealing with the child, particularly for the first. Tony's story is an incredible one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Tony's story is very much an inspirational story, and yeah, really thankful for him sharing his experience, really inspiring other people that are facing similar circumstances. And unfortunately, Tony's story isn't far from unique in terms of the challenges that he's faced. So you mentioned before, Mick, about the health visitor courteously moving on to the dad and asking about his feelings. Well, at this Deadcam, we conduct annual research, and it's very clear that that's quite a privilege, that example of the health visitor asking the dad about his health. And I think this day and age, we recognise that health is more than just physical, it's mental as well. And so if we understand that, we can start to kind of open up the conversations with dads and recognise that they perhaps are a patient in the whole experience as well as mom and baby.
I know, because actually the mental health is arguably more important than the physical health at that time, because people, I think, anticipated or expect, you know, that brutal time at the start, which might or might not involve a lack of sleep. And then people get, you know, and you just feel like you're being a bit snappy. And all it is you're just tired. We had a rule in our house, which was just saying, I'm just tired, which is if we ever started like feeling like we were going to get at each other, we'd just have this thing, which is go, I'm just tired. Or we'd say, are you just tired? Yes. And that was kind of our get out of jail free card, because yeah, it explained it all. But, you know, when you have a child, for mum, there can be the physical things. But for the dad, the mental side of things is probably more important, isn't it?
Well, I mean, we know that on average about 40% of couples say that their arguments increase after the first child. We know that's a reality. And part of our journey at This Dad Can is really to support those parents both navigate that, what it means for communication, what it means for supporting mom, but also some of those practical changes as well, whether it's sleep deprivation or other presenting challenges as well. And so I think, yeah, absolutely, if we just blindly walk in thinking that yeah, health isn't impacted on the dad, obviously we just accept the reality of some of the poor stats that are out there. Domestic violence affecting 39,000 babies, mental health problems affecting 144,000 babies, and drug and alcohol problems affecting 109,000 babies. So I think it's time that we start to really lift the lid and recognise that actually modern day families do involve mum and dad, and what can we do to support both of those parties.
There's obviously the thing that you can have coming from the health visitors or from the NHS and for those in sort of quote power, but there's something that it's a little bit different, which is what you're doing, which is about sort of community, a community of dads being able to talk and share. Because actually, if you've got that community talking amongst themselves, suddenly if you turn to a health professional and say, what about this? They're not just going to go, oh, no, that's just you. You're just a crank, or, you know, you're just a one off. They suddenly realise, oh, actually, there's something in this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, at This Dad Can, we've got our online courses, which are all about trying to drive that familiarity. But locally, we also run a monthly dad breakfast as well as dad days out. And they're very much trying to normalise the whole process. So fellas, we're traditionally quite closed in terms of being able to talk about our emotions, being able to talk about the reality of some of the challenges that we're all facing. But also we're also known as a breed that are quite socially isolated as well. The reality is that there's loads of stats out there that demonstrate that as men get older, that they become more socially isolated. You've got fantastic organisations like Men in Sheds and various others that are seeking to overcome that. And part of our journey is really, how do we normalise this process? Like, actually, our dad breakfast, people can come down to the likes of Wigwam or other venues where we run them in the city. And just meet with other fellas over a full English, and that's very much an informal environment. We're not saying, right, you've got to have like your leg hanging off to come here. This is just like normal dads, the fella off the street, the fella that you sit next to in the workplace, and just meeting together, having a good time, and just being able to chat.
My name's Mick on Mental Health Monday. We got Tony Crone in the studio, VPND Daddy on social media, and also John Neville from the website This Dad Can. Tony's been sharing his story of postnatal depression as a dad. Tony, one of the things that might surprise people is that after your first experience, including you know, the thoughts around suicide after your first, you've actually now got two more children. You got three in total now.
Three under five. Yes, it's bizarre. I thought after one I'd stop. I figured out a way of dealing with my depression. I improved a lot. I got that bond back with Elizabeth, so it was like yeah, well, I want one more. Had Andrew, nothing wrong at all. My mental health was perfect. I still had the same feelings. I felt like I wasn't doing as much because Mel obviously took the burden of feeding, but I had Elizabeth to distract me. And as Andrew's grown older, I was like, maybe we'll have one more. And had Michael just before Christmas.
And how's that working out?
This is it's a whole new thing for me because Michael wasn't very well. He spent a week over at the women's in the neonatal unit. And I'll just say they were brilliant. They even let me spend the night lying next to Mel while our baby was being looked after. I have developed, I've actually interestingly developed more mental health symptoms since. But it's very different to what I had with Elizabeth. With Elizabeth, it was a detachment issue. Whereas with Michael, it's more like flashbacks of him being in hospital and little things. So when I've been in work, it's like a feeding tube reminds me of Michael being there. So I've gone from having PND to now developing PND with PTSD, because of what happened in the hospital. I'm having flashbacks and things that every now and again just little things will set me off.
Do you feel like you're better equipped now, or are you now open to the channels which might be able to help you out?
Yes, I was, because I could recognise how I felt. I was very quick to go and get the help. So with Elizabeth, it took me 4 months before I acknowledged I needed help. It took a breakdown. Whereas with Michael, after about 2 or 3 weeks, I think I was back in work 2 weeks before I had a mini meltdown at work where I just broke down. But I was very quick then to go back to my doctors. I was very quick to contact Talk Liverpool, and basically I'm now on the list for like CBT. So I was very quick to follow those channels, knowing that if I don't do it now, 3 or 4 months down the line, I'm going to be sitting there with, you know, with everything I had with Elizabeth, and I don't want that again.
CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we often talk on the programme about making people aware of the fact that they've got mental health, and actually you, upon discovering it first time around, the next time it's come back to sort of bite you on the bum, for want of a better phrase, you've thought, actually, I know the people to speak to, I know the things that I might require, and it's allowed you to jump in and try and nip it in the bud.
Yeah, it was, so I could, because I knew, obviously, it was slightly different for me because it was the first time I've been back in Liverpool. It's my first Scouse baby. I didn't know the avenues as such, but I went to my doctor and he straight away was brilliant. He was like, right, here's the number for Talk Liverpool. And when I spoke to them, I started to go through the diagnosis process, but I was very quick to say, look, I've had postnatal depression before. It feels very similar. There's some aspects I've never had before, but CBT worked really well for me last time. Can we explore that? And it felt like I was a bit more in control of my diagnosis with Elizabeth. It was a doctor telling me I had personality disorder or something else. Whereas this time I could go and say, look, I know what's wrong with me. I've been through it enough.
In terms of what was it like then moving from that rural, semi-rural environment to a metropolitan sort of city? Do you feel like the mental health conversation is happening differently up here?
Yes, it's, I have to say, rurally, dads groups happen a lot more. They tend to be like, there was three a week where I was living in Great Yarmouth. Some of that, they're down to like unemployment's higher over there than it is here. So a lot of dads work Monday to Friday. Health centres operate Monday to Friday. So there seems like there's less for me at the moment to do than there used to be. But obviously exploring with John and sort of seeing what John does and noticing there's a few different church groups out there that do similar dads groups on a Saturday. So it's more done privately now rather than over in Norfolk. It was very much done through council funding, whereas now it's like companies like This Dad Can and different churches and that doing groups and putting the onus on themselves to organise.
John, just set up for us how the website works and how people can kind of interact with it, if you like.
Yeah, so there's plenty of fantastic resources at thisdadcan.co.uk. So Tony's actually been one of our recent guest bloggers. We have loads of dads come on, tell their story via the community blog. On there, you can sign up additionally as well for our online courses. So they're predominantly around five common themes, which are supporting mom, communication, practical changes, happy parenting, and what it means to be a dad yourself. What does it look like this day and age? And he's really trying to encourage that familiarity. It's trying to encourage that confidence that comes from practice and routine. Part of our offering is very much our Facebook groups. We've got a couple of hundred dads that are already on there, and that just might be, actually, I just need to vent. I just need to chat this through with someone else before it escalates to something else, or just a bit of banter. So some absolutely fantastic resources on there, but locally dads can also connect with us offline.
And in terms of that sort of community in that sense, what do you think is the benefit of that? What sort of feedback do you get from dads who are involved? Are they saying, if I hadn't have been able to find this, I didn't know what I was going to do? What sort of things did they say to you?
Yeah, so, I mean, from our point of view, we know a quarter of dads without kids would rate their current knowledge of parenting as non-existent. So I always joke about the fact that my three-year-old daughter can change a nappy on a baby, a toy baby, but the average fella, we've never changed a nappy until we're actually doing it on our live baby when, obviously, the firstborn. We know 70% of men without kids would like to be more prepared, that they would like to be more confident about fathering. And so we're really responding to that. So some of the common feedback that we have from the dad breakfast, for example, is that, hey, we love the idea. We love the opportunity to just come and relax an environment that's very informal. It's not clinical. It's not coming to an alien environment. It's somewhere that we already go to, like a coffee shop locally. From that point of view, they can connect with local fathers.
Is it a good moaning session? You know, do people have a good moan about the problems, or is it simply, you know, do you look at it from a mental health point of view, or is it about that idea of just getting people together, yeah, allow the social interaction to take place?
Yeah, for us at This Dad Can, it's more about dads coming together. So we obviously create an environment where they can be honest. But naturally, we're not here to just have a moment. We're just literally having a brekkie with our kids.
But I think sometimes as a dad, you think like having a moan, particularly the moan we have with the group of dads that I get together with, that's almost like my ability to let off a little bit of steam, where you go, oh, this is happening. It's not necessarily moaning about the child itself or this, but it's situations and issues and things like that. And I think there's a, from your well-being point of view, sometimes being able to sort of package those things up, Tony, and put them to one side and go, are you experiencing that too? As soon as they say yes, that sounds exactly like my house, you go, ah, this is normal then.
Yeah, I think there's I've got a PND Daddies group, and I've got my Twitter hour and things, and it's quite interesting. We chat about how family life is, and there is sort of moments like I joked with a new dad recently that when you have your first baby, before you have your first baby, you want to go out to town, keys, bag, out the door. You have your first baby, keys, bag, changing bag, nappies, baby, check baby again. You know, and there's a list of things, you know, yeah. Even going out for a Saturday night, you know, I was going to say clubbing, but I'm getting up too old for that now. You know, Saturday night in town, it's like, have I got a babysitter? And then obviously, the more kids you get, have I got two or three babysitters? And it's, I'm finding it's like speaking to other dads, we especially on some of the groups I do, it's sort of, we speak and it's like, actually, we're all going through the similar things. We've all got similar restraints. So we've all got, a lot of us have all got work and trying to balance that work, baby. You know, mum's got, especially during paternity leave, mum's got 24 hours a day with the baby, which sometimes isn't brilliant for mum. But as a dad, we're like, we sort of get home and we're tired from work and mum's tired from baby. And it's about, you know, we've all got those similar struggles. And it's like, how do we have that time together?
How are you feeling at the moment?
I'm feeling really good at the moment. So I'm getting the help from Talk Liverpool. And I'm doing a lot of my own techniques as well. I develop a technique. It's bizarre to put it like this, but where I call it going out, like dating the kids, if you like. And it's where me and each of the kids go out. So me and Elizabeth go out to the cinema, to something, just me and her. Go to McDonald's on the way back or somewhere. And I do that with each of the kids now. So even with Michael's a bit too young to go anywhere, but I'll say to him, right, you go to bed, you go out, go get your hair done, go to the cinema. I'll have Michael. And it's just me developing those techniques that I knew worked with Elizabeth and now getting them to work with each of the other kids.
In terms of what can be done for dads, we'll just wrap up on this one, John. In terms of those conversations that take place before parenthood, is that something that you'd like to see sort of instilled so that maybe people like Tony, people like myself, when the new baby's on the way, that there is almost like a seed planted which says things might not go according to plan from a mental health point of view? If that is the case, have a look at these people, speak to these people, call these different numbers and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, Mick. I mean, from our point of view, we don't think referring dads to some of those fantastic third-party services is adequate in our eyes. We would much more prefer kind of a universal approach to tailoring and supporting dads, particularly around mental health. So from the start of their parenting journey and not segregating it to one side. A lot of us as fellas, we quite often think, okay, actually, no, it's not as severe as perhaps that person over there, or we segregate ourselves from that. So really, we're calling for an integral element of the NHS provision to be around, okay, men and their well-being and how they're an active part in parenting.
Brilliant stuff. We wish you all the best with thisdadcan.co.uk and the PND Daddy on social media, Tony. You don't need me to plug that. You've got more followers than everybody put together, you.
I don't know how.
You're doing very well. There's loads of blogs and links on there. And I know you've got some really exciting stuff coming up as well. So I'll urge people to follow up there. Don't forget Mental Health Monday with us every Monday here on Radio City Talk. And Jake Mills will join us for Mental Health Extra, discussing this very topic. Jake and myself are both dads on that one. That'll be Tuesday from 2:15 here on Radio City Talk and as a podcast as well with Mental Health Extra.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle
on Radio City Talk.
Okay, so it's Radio City Talk. It's Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick Coyle. I'm very pleased to say we're going to be joined by an organisation, or the representative of an organisation, called the Lions Barber Collective. This is a really fantastic idea, and it's a men's mental health awareness and suicide prevention movement. We'll find out exactly why it's related to men with the founder, Tom Chapman, who joins us on Mental Health Monday. Tom, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me on.
I know you're based down in the south of England, but am I right in thinking that the Lions Barber Collective first roared, if you like, up in the northwest and in Liverpool?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so I mean, we formed in September 2015, and then with all the barbers from all over the UK and Ireland, we gathered at the Great British Barber Bash, which was in Liverpool. So that was our first meeting as the pride got together, as it were.
Brilliant stuff. The pride, I like that. Just tell us, if you can, Tom, why you thought that you might be able to provide an opportunity that maybe men couldn't find elsewhere.
I think it's just important to provide as many opportunities as possible, because everybody's different and everyone speaks and opens up in different ways. And I think that barbers have that that relationship with their clients. And even if it's the first time you sit in that barber chair, you're instantly allowing people into your personal space, and there's a level of intimacy where touching their heads and skin and neck and places that you wouldn't let anyone, other stranger, touch, really. So it's a unique relationship of trust, which I think it's time for us to take advantage of and look after our clients, considering they pay for us to live, really.
Was it, do you think, a leap stepping from stereotypically, are you going on holiday this year, to how are you feeling? No, really, how are you really feeling?
Do you know what? I think I've been in the industry for 16 years. And ever since I started, there's been an ongoing joke that I'm not only a hairdresser, I'm not only a barber, I'm a counsellor, I'm a psychotherapist. I think people do tend to open up in the chair. Anyway, I don't think you need to ask them to. I think it's just giving people an opportunity and making sure that they realise it's a safe space.
In terms of what they give as well, is it about you maybe signposting a few things to people, or do you find that people do open up about their mental health as they sit there, as you give them, you know, a long on top with a two round the sides?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be as deep as I'm suicidal, I want to take my life. Sometimes it is. But it can be literally as simple as I'm having a really bad day at work, and or, you know, people, they're having a bad time at home, relationships, and just letting off steam every now and then will be very preventative to perhaps further more serious mental health issues.
And I guess it's part of that thing as well, and we've talked about it many times on Mental Health Monday, that sometimes men almost need to be sort of tricked or cajoled into opening up about their mental health. And actually, you're doing that because you're doing it in a really normal environment, mundane environment, isn't it? You're just going to get your hair cut. You do it every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks, or whatever it would be. And then as a result of that, you have a conversation which you wouldn't have had maybe with another individual.
Yeah, it's a completely non-clinical, non-judgmental environment. The idea is that, you know, we will, the aim is that we've got a training program to be able to recognise, recognise the signs, then be able to talk to the clients, and then be able to listen non-judgmentally with empathy, and then signpost them on to all the amazing organisations that exist already, like Samaritans, for example. And we did a survey with Bluebeard's Revenge, which is a men's grooming product, and those guys helped us get this results that actually we found out that we had more of a follow-up and saw our clients more than they saw their GPs. So we are available to see that kind of change. You know, somebody often, most sort of common symptoms are gaining weight very quickly, losing weight very quickly, too much sleep, not enough sleep. And if you're seeing people every 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, you notice those things quite quickly.
And actually, that's one of the things that you're working on as part of the collective, that you're not just now doing it as, oh, he's put on a bit of weight, I better say something. You're actually training people to actually recognise those symbols as well, and to actually advise people about what they can and can't say, where they should go for advice, things that they should actually do in a professional way.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the Barber Talk training programme, we're hopefully going to have our first ever, the pilot training programme in May, with a load of barbers, which we're really looking forward to. But in the meantime, we're actually getting Barber Talk Lite, which is just going to be an online awareness program that anybody can do completely for free. And you'll get a certificate and a barbershop sticker window which says this shop supports mental health. And anybody can do that. It's just a way of giving you a little bit of awareness about some of the things that are going on with suicide statistics, a few things that you can do to make your barber chair a safe space, and that should be going live in the next week or so.
Fantastic. And I guess as well, for barbers, hairdressers, whoever it is who gets on board with this one, it's win-win, isn't it, really? Because if people look at it and think, well, that's not relevant to me, it doesn't really matter, they're not going to not go in as a result of it, but actually people might look at it and go, well, that actually is relevant to me, maybe this is a good space for me to be in.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I've done is locally let people know it's okay to talk to me. And that hasn't affected my client base. And, you know, some of my clients that I've done for years have, since they've realised it's okay to talk to me, have opened up and told me things. And then I've also had new clientele come in to me specifically because they want to talk to me about their problems, if I had any information or places to signpost them to in the area. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it's twofold. You're supporting your existing clientele, plus you're, you know, allowing members of the community to have a place to go and talk.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting as well, when you sort of put your head above the parapet to sort of say, right, I'm going to talk about mental health, we find it with this program that people do open up to you. And I think the first time, Tom, that happens to you, you do go, oh, right, wow, right, this is happening now, and this person is now asking me to be the expert, even though both you and I, we're not clinically trained in this one as well, but suddenly people put so much on you, and you feel almost a sense of responsibility towards them.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a sense of responsibility, but I think, you know, looking after our clients, they're the most important people in our life. They pay for our shops, they pay for our roofs over our head and our family, and I think you know, we're not trying to make barbers into counsellors. We're just trying to, you know, it's a befriending thing. You know, we just want to listen to them. And sometimes you don't even need to give them any information. They just want to talk to you. They just want a non-judgmental ear. We're trying to bridge the gap between the communities and the existing organisations that are out there. You know, we're not trying to make barbers into psychologists or counsellors or therapists. It's just trying to, you know, perhaps direct people and bridge that gap and just be a friendly ear for people, have that empathy.
Do you ever get people come in, Tom, who actually don't want a haircut? They just want to be in the environment?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, we do. I mean, I think, you know, as a shop, we've had all sorts of things going. We do Lion's Den, which is a drop-in support group. So once a month on last Friday of every month, in that evening, we'll do late opening. We have a mental health support worker that sits in the shop and people can just come and go. And Domino's locally support that and give us free pizza. I mean, we do everything from that. And we also had a thing called Salon Sessions, which was live music in the shop, like once every couple of months with drinks and pizza and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of cool to make it a place to hang out. And I think especially in Afro barbering, for a long time, it's been a community place. I think perhaps we should learn from that kind of model and create it as a place for a pillar of community for people to come and to come and talk and strengthen each other and be there for each other.
Absolutely. I was going to mention that as a cultural thing. The culture of hanging around in a barbershop is actually seen as a traditional culture from some different walks of life as well. So it's interesting, actually, that you're finding now that it is playing out in the walks of life in the metropolitan part of town that you're in. If people want to find out more about the Lion's Den sessions, the Salon sessions as well, where's your sort of physical base?
So, I mean, the best thing they can do is go online and go to the lionsbarbercollective.com. All the stuff and info will be on there. If you want to get in touch with us, our email is on there. It's info@thelionsbarbercollective.com.
And if people want to find out more information about that, we'll get it up on our social media as well associated with this, and you can find out more information about the fantastic work done by Tom Chapman and the Lions Barber Collective. The comprehensive website's got loads of information, .com, on the end of it, and you can get everything you need to know. Congratulations as well. You got a Point of Light Award by the Prime Minister. What was that like?
Yeah, thank you ever so much. Yeah, that was a surprise, yeah, but... Yeah, it's nice to see that things are recognised and that's helped us get more coverage. And in fact, you know, getting more coverage creates more awareness and lowers the taboo and stigma around it. The more we talk about it, the better.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for your time today, Tom. Really appreciate you joining us on the programme and thanks for speaking to us on Mental Health Monday.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Mental Health Monday.
On Radio City Talk.
With Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.